Case number 13-5103, ARC Initiative et al. Appellant versus Thomas L. Tidwell, U.S. Forest Service et al. Mr. Eubanks for the appellants, Mr. DiMasio for the appellees.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. I appreciate counsel's flexibility and shifting days for oral argument.
Good afternoon. Before the court is a straightforward case which the government has unnecessarily complicated by raising a number of unpersuasive...
So it's the government who... It's complicated, so the government's the villain here, complicating it.
Well, Judge Griffith, this, we believe, is a very simple case in which my clients...
Okay, well, that makes me feel bad because it's not simple to me, and so you make me feel like I'm missing something. Can I ask you some questions about standing? I'm most concerned, and I want you to help me understand this. I'm not making an argument right now. I want to understand a couple things about standing. First of all, are you still asking the service to suspend Aspen's authorization to regarding the 2006 permit? Is that still in play?
Yes, yeah, so referring to Your Honor's question, so there were two pieces to our request. And the first one, which is the broader long-term relief, would be designation of the parcel of public lands as roadless. Yeah. And that's really the major piece of it.
Right.
A smaller component, which we did ask at that time, was for the...
But are you still asking for that now, or is that
interim suspension? Well, our understanding from the Aspen Skiing Company, the intervener, is that while they have undertaken certain activities from that 2006 authorization, there are other activities that are expected to go forward in the near future.
And so you would like the permit to be suspended as to those?
On remand, the normal course of action, while the agency actually takes the first look, which it has never done, at the evidence that we've submitted to determine under 36 CFR 294.47 whether or not, you know, we're asking for an up or down decision on whether this particular parcel and the new evidence submitted would meet the criteria. During that period, we believe the correct result would be to suspend that
application. Okay, now, so let me get to the real question I had that's something that I'm confused about, and that's the effect of the what the government calls the grandfathering provision on the roadless designation. Now, correct my understanding, and I really mean this. This isn't rhetorical. So my understanding is that in 2006, Aspen was given permission to go ahead and develop the contested parcel. Why isn't it the case that in the CRR that these so-called grandfathering provisions, as I read them, they sure look to me as if they're saying permits that were issued before the CRR, before 2012, those are untouched. Those remain as they were. And if that was the case, then obviously designated roadless areas wouldn't have any effect on what Aspen did. Now, what? Tell me what I'm missing about that, because if I'm understanding correctly, you have a serious redressability problem. Even if you got the designation of a roadless area, you'd run up against this grandfathering provision. Am I making sense?
You are making
good.
Sense.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
And I have three responses to that, and we have briefed this in our reply brief, but I want to be absolutely crystal clear about what our position is on this. First and foremost, even if that grandfathering provision were as the government states this,
right,
which we believe is absolutely not the case, that would only apply to that narrow relief we talked about with respect to the 2006 authorization. That would have absolutely no effect on causation or redressability with respect to the roadless petition, getting this parcel designated as roadless going forward.
Well, no, it would. I mean, so if you got it designated as roadless going forward, I mean, what you want, you don't want the trees cut down, right? I mean, not to make it too simple, you don't want trees cut down in that area. If you got the roadless designation, what is there that would prevent Aspen from cutting those trees down? Because the grandfathering provision seems to suggest that that permission was granted back in 2006 and is untouched.
Yes, so I want to be very clear about this. All the 2006 decision did was allow certain narrow activities to go forward. The cutting of a few hundred trees over a 1 square mile parcel. This is a very large parcel. And in this case, the government and AFC, Aspen Ski Company, have both admitted that the loss of the few hundred trees that has already occurred pursuant to that 2006 decision does not necessarily render this parcel not roadless for future purposes. What my clients care about with respect to the big relief we're seeking, getting this parcel designated as roadless as it properly should have been years ago, would mean that in the future, Aspen Ski Company, a timber company, a mining company could not come in there, put a road in, could not come in there and do a clear cut.
Is there any evidence that that's imminent? I mean, that seems awfully speculative.
Well, right? So what we have on that, Your Honor, there are a number of recent decisions that the Forest Service has issued, and there are others on the horizon, and there would be specific processes in place, procedural mechanisms to protect my clients and other members of the public who use this parcel if this were designated roadless. And
remember, all right, so you're relying in your reply brief on subsection C.
Right.
That's your first argument, saying that under the rule there is this qualification that allows, as you put it here, responsible official to further restrict activities allowed within the Colorado roadless areas.
Correct, Judge Rogers. So that, again, gets to the 2006 authorization. And I apologize because, as you say, it's more complicated than it should be.
But we're following up on Judge Griffith's questions to you. And your responses were about the 2006 authorization. So I'm just looking at your brief where that's your first response to the government's argument that the grandfathering clause would bar you from obtaining any relief.
So, yes, as to the 2006 authorization, we think the grandfathering clause is not what the government says it is.
I just want to go through your arguments in your brief. The first one is you say there's a specific provision that allows further restrictions to be imposed.
Yes.
That's your first argument.
It allows the responsible official, which in this case is White River National Forest Supervisor Scott Fitzwilliams, if this were designated a roadless area, which the court must presume under the court's precedents for standing purposes, if this were a roadless area, in that situation, Scott Fitzwilliams, the lead official on this, would have the ability and indeed the authority to further restrict.
To modify or revoke a prior permit? Is that what you say C means?
What we're saying is that it allows the discretion, and the preamble makes clear that the reason that the Forest Service retained that discretion was to make future modifications based on two different circumstances. Error, an administrative error based on mapping or other technology, which is exactly what we've presented here. We presented Landsat technology, which is a satellite imagery. We have presented mapping technology, and we have presented collected field data. And if you look at 36 CFR 294.47, those are the exact types of data in which the Forest Service retained discretion to make changes to boundaries that have been erroneously.
C is talking about modifications to roadless to designations of roadless areas, right?
Correct.
And you're saying that can trump the earlier language in A saying no modifications to permits.
Yes, we explained this in our reply brief, and what we think, so you have to understand the Colorado roadless rule, which again, we're not challenging in this case. This was just used as the excuse for why the agency failed to review our evidence at all. And the Colorado roadless rule was a landscape level rule across the entire state of Colorado, looking at millions and millions of acres. And so what it did not do is go in on a site specific level and say, this permit decision, this project decision, is being altered as a result of today's rule. Not surprisingly, though, what it did do in 294.48C, as Judge Rogers points out, and our briefs extensively talk about, is it retains discretion at the later time when some event occurs.
So the government would say about that, I think, that provision just doesn't matter because that's trumped by the grandfathering provision, which lends essentially a permanent immunity to this parcel. And so anything you say about the provisions just don't matter. So it seems like what's ultimately happening is you and the government disagree about what the grandfathering provisions mean. The government has one view of what the grandfathering provisions mean. You have another view. And in that situation, what are we supposed to do? Because one possibility is you say, well, look, we have to actually decide what the grandfathering provisions mean in order to determine whether they're standing.
Mm-hmm.
But another way to look at it would say, no, we don't have to actually resolve what the grandfathering provisions mean. As long as what you say, as long as you have a non-frivolous argument as to what the grandfathering provisions mean, well, then that's enough for standing. And then you get past that issue and you go and you go further into what we can call the merits inquiry. I don't know, are you making that argument? Or is that not?
Well, again, I think the foundational argument we're making, and I'm hoping I'm getting this through, is as to the petition itself, getting this designated as roadless, the main relief we're seeking, the grandfathering clause has absolutely no effect. Even if the government is 100% correct about it, which we fundamentally disagree with, it has no effect as to the main broad relief we're seeking.
But they just disagree with you about that, because they would say that's your position. You think the grandfathering provision has no effect with respect to the broad relief, which is getting the parcel designated as roadless. And what the government would say is you're just wrong. It does have an effect, because what the grandfathering provision tells us is it doesn't matter if this parcel gets designated as roadless. It just doesn't matter. You still can't stop the activity from occurring because it's pursuant to a permit that was already authorized.
Well, right, but I think a key point here, Judge Srinivasan, is that let's assume for a moment we hadn't asked for the interim suspension of activities. We were just asking for this parcel to be designated as roadless. The fact that they have issued decisions in the past has no effect on that. We're asking for a forward-looking designation of roadless in this parcel, which will, in fact, put protections, concrete protections, on the ground for my clients and others going forward.
You're saying it will put protections on the ground, and what the government is saying is, no, it doesn't put into place any relevant protections because the permit got grandfathered in. So no matter what happens with roadless or not, or a roadless designation with respect to this parcel, you can't ultimately get any redress because this parcel is insulated in perpetuity because it falls within the grandfathering provision. And it seems to me that what ultimately happens is you disagree with them about what effect the grandfathering provision has. And the question for us is, what do we do in a situation in which there's a disagreement between the parties as to the effect of a provision that the government says goes to redressability? And I think one argument that you would have is to say, well, as long as I have a non-frivolous construction of that grandfathering provision, then I've got enough to get past standing.
Well, and we certainly believe we do. Another reason I haven't gotten to get out, which is very important, is this is raised here, yes, in the standing context, but this is really a merits argument masquerading as a standing argument. And if you look at the two letters that were given by the government here, the only basis, this is an APA case, the only basis in the record for rejecting our petition, they relied on a Tenth Circuit ruling, which did not address the roadless issues in this case at all. And they relied on the Colorado Roadless Rule, which did not mention, address, or implicate this parcel at all. You can't find it in there. And so remember that this administrative record says nothing about a grandfathering clause.
But didn't it address a larger issue? And that is, we've decided in our discretion, we've decided that that we're not going to have any roadless areas in permitted areas. Where we've already given a permit, we're going to keep it. Now, you may not agree with that, but that's not an irrational basis for a decision, right? But that's what they said, right?
Well, it would be if they said that, Judge Griffith. Yeah. They didn't. They said that they did not say that at all. That is the crux of the issue in this case, and I want to be crystal clear before I hold the rest of my time for rebuttal. What they said in four different places in the preamble is that they were removing 8,260 specific acres that they had determined to be degraded. Only those 8,260 acres, no more, no less. They did an environmental impact statement looking at only those acres, and they vetted it to the public.
Do they need to say that expressly, or don't we have authority that says when it's clear that that's what's going on, or where there's an implication that that's what's going on, we don't require of administrators that sort of precision of language?
Absolutely not. Not in this circumstance, and here's the reason. If the approach that the government has taken in this case, which again is found nowhere in the record, it's entirely a post hoc rationalization by government counsel, if that were the position, it would be a drastic and major change to longstanding roadless management by the Forest Service, which has always made determinations of roadless based on objective, factual conditions on the ground. It has never before been because you fall within a particular area or some other area you're in or you're out. It has to be based on the factual criteria on the ground. If they're changing from that 20 years of longstanding management practices, they need to vet that to the public under basic rulemaking, APA public comment procedures. And if they're not going to do that, they can't then come here once they're challenged and say, well, we did exactly that, even though it's nowhere in the rule. And that we would respectfully submit is what happened here. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
I think you'll have time for rebuttal, but back on the standing question for a second, because I at least want to give the government an opportunity to respond to this. So the arguments that you made were twofold, I think, in getting past the redressability slash causation bar that the government interposed in its brief. We've talked about one of them, which is has to do with whether the construction of the grandfathering provision is in fact correct. But then the other thing you said, I think, in your reply brief was that, look, there's every indication that Aspen Ski Company actually wants to go beyond the parameters of the 2006 permit. And if that were true, then that would be another arrow in your quiver with respect to standing. Now, where do we stand on that? Because the part of the record that you quoted has this quote that says, Aspen Skiing may seek to conduct additional timber removal and make additional ski improvements. But then it goes on to say, pursuant to the 2006 authorization. And so there's a question as to whether they're in fact going to stick within the confines of the 2006 authorization, in which event I think we're stuck with the issue that the government has raised. Or is there indication that they're actually going to go beyond the 2006 authorization? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Two responses to that, Judge Srinivasan. The first one is our understanding is that Aspen Skiing Company does intend in the relatively near future to seek other things on this parcel. We don't know what those are yet. Obviously, those are proprietary. But that could include ski lifts, which is motorized activity, not normally allowed in a roadless area. There are other, far broader timber activities that could occur.
But are those within the permit, though?
Outside of the 2006 authorization. These are new things they're considering expanding on Burnt Mountain in this parcel. The second thing I started with this earlier and didn't get a chance to finish, is there are a number of current decisions that have come out in the past year, past 2 years, that are ongoing. These are long-term, 5-year, 10-year decisions that have ongoing implementation, one of which, for example, is called the Healthy Forest Initiatives. And that is something in which the Forest Service authorized itself to go out and cut trees to protect against infestation and other things. And interesting determination in that, and I have copies of it if the court's interested, is they made a distinction and said, we're implementing this over the next 10 years everywhere throughout this particular forest, the White River National Forest, except two places.
So the two roadless areas in that forest. So would you be asking us to take judicial notice of this Healthy Forest Initiative? In other words, I didn't hear a specific response to Judge Srinivasan's concern about what the record you did cite shows, but rather you referred to this Healthy Forest Initiative.
Yes, well, Judge Rogers, because we're not challenging the Healthy Forest Initiative in this case, we're using it to merely show that we have standing.
I understand that.
And so we could either, have the court take judicial notice. This is obviously a decision the government has issued. It's out.
Well, our concern is if there's nothing planned, there's nothing imminent.
Well, I can do you one better. It's better than imminent. It's happening now. It's an ongoing 10-year implementation that just started in the past year, and it will continue for 9 more years.
So even if Aspen Ski is not planning to do anything beyond the authorization it already has, you are claiming that the broader relief you're seeking is defeated by the Forest Service's own initiatives?
What we're saying is the plaintiffs would confer immediate benefits by having roadless protections in place, one of which would be that initiative. At minimum, the agency would have to go back and provide some procedural process, and then presumably, because the other two roadless areas have been exempted from that specifically, the assumption would be that this would too. The fallback, and I just need to mention this quickly, and then I'm happy to save the rest of my time, is that this issue was never raised in the district court. The government has shifted positions on standing. They raised a different standing argument below, and they lost. And the court said we easily have standing. So now they've raised this new issue here. New counsel for government has stepped in, came up with a whole new set of arguments. At minimum, we should be allowed to go back to the district court, look at the Healthy Forest Initiatives, look at some of the other ongoing activities, the future activities of Aspen Skiing Company, and we should be allowed to take jurisdictional discovery and determine whether we can, in fact, show standing based on these new theories that have never been developed by a district court record. We've never been able to submit affidavits on. We feel that, at least out of fairness, that's the absolute minimum that should happen here.
All right, thank you. And we'll give you some time on rebuttal. Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Nicholas Damasio on behalf of the United States Forest Service. May it please the Court, I'd like to start with two specific responses to the arguments that counsel just raised. Specifically, what we're raising is a plain text argument based on Section 294.48B of the Colorado Roadless Rule. And what that section specifically says is that the subpart of the Code of Federal Regulations that contains the Colorado Roadless Rule does not revoke, suspend, or modify any project or activity decision that was in place at the time the rule was promulgated.
So even if someone were to bring to the service evidence of changed circumstances, just take a hypothetical, there would be nothing under the rule that would authorize the service to make any adjustments to the boundary?
So we need to separate two things here. Mm-hmm. There's the boundary for the Colorado mm-hmm. roadless area, mm-hmm. and then there's the project that is at issue in this case, which is the Snowmass Ski Area mm-hmm. Improvements Project.
Right.
Now, with respect to a project that was approved before the rule went into effect, that is grandfathered pursuant to the plain text of Section 294.48B.
So there is nothing that the Forest Service can do, no matter what is happening in the Snowmass area after this rule was promulgated. I just need to be clear on what your position is. You say plain text.
Yes, according to the text of the rule, the project, because it was permitted before the rule went into effect, what that essentially means is it's a non-retroactive application mm-hmm. provision. The rule doesn't apply retroactively to projects that were...
But can they change it? Can change circumstance? Isn't there ongoing revocation and suspension authority by the Forest Service that at any time, under changed circumstances, they can revoke the permit?
Well,
There's no time limit on that, is there?
What you're referring to is a separate provision which grants the service discretion in the discretion of the authorized officer.
So in answer to Judge Rogers' question, isn't the answer to Judge Rogers' question, of course you can change the 2006 permit under changed circumstances, right? Yeah, under the revocation and suspension authority.
Under the revocation and suspension authority, the authorized officer has the discretion to revoke a previously issued permit. But what the grandfathering provision of the rule says is that the service is not going to exercise that discretion to change a permit that was in place before the rule went into effect merely because the area has now been designated as
because
a Colorado
Because of the rule
Roadless
itself,
area.
You're saying one of the changed circumstances that if the administrator has authority under changed circumstances to revoke or suspend the 2006 permit, what you're saying is, but one of those changed circumstances is not the CRR.
The designation of the area as a Colorado Roadless Area. And again, I think it's important, the changed circumstances language that you're speaking about is in Section 294.47 of the Colorado Roadless Rule. And that provision is subject to the grandfathering provision because it's in the subpart of the Code of Federal mm-hmm. Regulations that's stated in 294.48B as not revoking.
Is that tantamount to an argument that the reply brief arguments are frivolous insofar as the interpretation of the grandfathering clause?
They're contrary to the plain text of the regulation, Your Honor.
So they're frivolous? In other words, you say plain text, and Judge Griffith and I have been asking you questions based on hypotheticals. And you've come up with the answer that, well, what the final rule means is that if you had a prior authorization, we are not going to exercise our discretion under changed circumstances to make any adjustments to the authority you previously had.
I think that's a fair summary of the argument.
Isn't that what you just said? I mean, I wasn't trying to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary of the argument.
It seems like it would be hard to say that a contrary construction of the grandfathering provision is frivolous, given that you never made the contrary construction in the proceedings below. It just surfaces for the. If it was so obvious, I think somebody would have noticed it and made this argument below, and it never came up.
It was actually raised by the interveners in their brief. You're correct that we did not raise that particular provision before the district court, but the interveners did. furthermore, you know, standing is a jurisdictional issue that...
we have the duty to address it on our own, but just in terms of the question, if the standard is whether their contrary reading of the grandfathering provision is frivolous, it seems difficult for you to make the assertion that it's frivolous, given that you didn't even make the argument below. Are you saying that? I mean, I think that's one. Would you, if the standard is they get past the jurisdictional stage as long as a contrary construction of the grandfathering rule is non-frivolous, are you making the argument that, well, any contrary construction actually is frivolous? This speaks so clearly that a contrary construction would be frivolous.
I think, again, I don't know if I would use the word frivolous.
Okay.
I'm hesitant to use that word. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that it's contrary to the plain terms of the regulation itself that I've quoted, which says that the subpart of the CFR, which contains this boundary modification provision, simply does not modify, suspend, or revoke any prior authorization.
As I understood what you just said then about 294.47, which is that it's part of the same subpart.
Correct.
But if I'm understanding that correctly, then you would say that even the modification and administrative corrections part, which is where you get the changed circumstances, apparently the only place, if I'm understanding you right,
that's correct,
where you get the changed circumstances, but that just doesn't apply with respect to areas that are the subject of a pre-existing permit.
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
So there is no way to modify an area that has a pre-existing permit. It's perpetually immune no matter what. That's your position.
I don't think we need to go that far in this case because the only reason that they asked for the change was the only reason that they asked for the suspension of this project was because they wanted it designated as a Colorado roadless area, and what the grandfathering provision states is that is not a sufficient reason to request the service to exercise its discretion to modify, suspend, or revoke a pre-existing permit. I hope you followed that.
Yeah.
They only had one reason for asking for the suspension of the project, and that reason, simply according to the plain terms of this regulation, is not sufficient to modify a pre-existing permit.
Under your reading of it, I mean, I suppose there's a contrary reading of the grandfathering provision, which the other side put forward in the reply brief, albeit I think it was in a footnote, but under which what the grandfathering provision really does is just to say, look, as of this time, nothing in what's codified by the Colorado roadless rule affects anything. But that doesn't tell you what happens an hour from now, a week from now, a year from now.
I think,
and that's an alternate construction.
If that were a permissible construction of the regulation, it wouldn't say that the subpart of the CFR does not modify, suspend, or revoke any provision. Mm-hmm. I think that argument is foreclosed by the plain terms of the regulation by referring to the subpart of the Code of Federal Regulations. In other words, the entire rule, including the boundary modification provision, which addresses later changes to areas, simply does not modify, suspend, or revoke any previously issued decision. It's essentially a non-retroactivity principle.
But it could still take account of the word subpart, it seems to me, because it could say that nothing that this subpart has done to now matters. But it doesn't tell you what happens with respect to this subpart and its provisions in the future.
Again, 294.47 addresses that issue, and because it's part of the subpart that contains the Colorado roadless rule, it's subject to the grandfathering provision. So again, the intent here is that whether the area is designated now or later as a part of a boundary modification or revision, doesn't matter. The rule doesn't apply retroactively. And I would like to address this 294.48C provision that they've cited in their brief. That provision, you need to read not just the sentence that they're quoting, but the entire subsection C. And what that's talking about is the various tree cutting and road building restrictions that are implemented by the Colorado roadless rule. What that section basically says is that the restrictions there are the maximum amount of tree cutting that you can do. The service is reserving to itself discretion to impose greater restrictions on tree cutting or road building within Colorado roadless areas. But C simply does not address at all the applicability of the rule to previously approved projects. That question is specifically addressed in 294.48A and B. And as you know, under basic principles of statutory construction, a more specific provision controls over a more general provision. So our point here is that because A and B specifically address the application of the rule to previously approved projects, nothing in C undoes that. It's simply a general provision referring to the service's ability to further restrict tree cutting and road building activities within Colorado roadless areas. My second point in response to the arguments that plaintiff's counsel raised here is that if you look specifically at their complaint and their declarations, they allege only one source of injury in this case. And as your honors well know, standing is assessed at the time the complaint is filed. If you look at the complaint, the only allegation, source of injury in this case, is in paragraph 9. And what that says is that tree cutting and proposed development of new ski runs under this project will impact Mr. Doar's aesthetic and recreational interests in the parcel. Then, in terms of relief, they ask the court to enjoin the authorization to Aspen Ski Company to conduct the project while the service considers designating the area as a Colorado roadless area. So both in terms of injury and relief, there's simply one source of injury in this case. That is the project, which is grandfathered.
Now, on this issue, can I ask you the same question that we posed to the other side, which is, do you know if there's anything that Aspen Ski Company intends to do that goes beyond the parameters of the 2006 permit? I recognize that you're not them, but they're aligned with you.
No, Your Honor. There's nothing that Aspen Ski Company could do that went beyond this permit without seeking additional approval from the service.
Right, and is there any indication out there as to whether they have designs to do that, whether there's an intent to do that? Is there something that we can look to tell us? Then maybe there's not, but I'm just wondering if you know of anything.
There's another part of this project which was separated out, which is the ski traverse aspect of the project. That issue is still ongoing. The service is, I think, just recently issued its decision on that aspect of the project in a separate decision document. That issue continues to go on in the forest. And there may be other things going on in the forest that I'm not aware of.
With respect to that one in particular, would the roadless designation here have a bearing on that?
Conceivably, I mean, this was an area that used to be in inventory roadless area that as part of the Colorado roadless rule, they removed that that roadless designation from the area.
Oh, that was so, the 80 acres? That was part of the 80 acres?
Correct. Yes. So, but the point here, Your Honor, is they only challenged one decision. That was the decision to do the glading and ski run construction in this particular part of Burnt Mountain. And with respect to that project, no, they're not going beyond the bounds of the permit. The only thing that's at issue in front of this court right now is the project that was approved in 2006, which Ark Initiative challenged and lost. And then they brought this petition as a kind of second bite, trying to again, in their complaint and declarations, citing that as the only source of injury. And our position is that project, because it was litigated, they lost, and it was approved before the Colorado roadless rule went into effect, there simply is no impact. Their injury, the only injury they alleged here, is not redressable by this court. And so this court should hold that Ark Initiative lacks standing.
Could you address the merits argument, the sufficiency of the Forest Service decision and their explanation?
Yes. So one of the things that plaintiffs like to say here is that we've hit the ball. And that simply is not correct. If you look at the environmental impact statement for the Colorado roadless rule, it is plainly disclosed on the face of that document that ski areas that are permitted or allocated by forest plans are not included within Colorado roadless area boundaries. That decision was disclosed to the public. There was public comment on that issue. The service decided to go forward with that option. Now, essentially what the plaintiff's petition did here was it asked the service to reconsider that decision 2 weeks later. And that's really important to keep in mind, because not only are roadless designations themselves discretionary, there's no statute or regulation that requires the service to manage any particular area as roadless. But this is not a case about the service's initial decision about whether or not to designate an area as roadless. The plaintiffs essentially came in and asked the service to revisit the boundary for a Colorado roadless area that it set as part of a six-year-long public rulemaking process in which these guys just didn't even participate. Now, the rule itself...
So it would be one thing if the document, the Tidwell letter, I guess is what you're focusing on, if the Tidwell letter just said, these issues were all bandied about in the process leading up to the adoption of the Colorado roadless rule. Just 2 weeks later, the service thought about all this. There's no need to do anything different at this point, end of story. And I suppose that there's portions of that could be read in that way. But then there's also a sentence that says, in addition, changes to the area were made based on site-specific knowledge of White River National Forest personnel. And can you address because the other side has raised the question as to whether that's in fact true. Can you address what we're supposed to do with that sentence?
I think that sentence is just indicating to petitioners that their folks they're aware of conditions on the ground and they made choices based on the actual present conditions of the area. That's what that is intended to mean. But the first part of what you said absolutely is expressed in this letter, and that's where Chief Tidwell says that the roadless area inventory for the Colorado roadless rule excluded lands within ski area permitted boundaries, and this change was applied to the Burnt Mountain Colorado roadless area, and he sees no reason to revisit that decision. I mean, it's a simple, straightforward statement that there was no mistake, there's no changed circumstances. This petition simply didn't raise anything that would cause the service to revisit its decision. And again, this is a highly discretionary decision by the part of the agency. The rule itself makes revisiting the boundaries for Colorado roadless areas discretionary because 294.47 says that the service may revisit those boundaries, not that it has to do so every so many number of years or under certain circumstances. So again, Your Honors, this is simply a second bite at the apple on behalf of these plaintiffs, and the service has a very minimal requirement to state a short and plain reason for its denial of the petition to revisit this boundary, and I would submit that the statement here was more than sufficient to do that if this court reaches the merits.
All right, thank you. All right, counsel for appellant.
Thank you. So I'd like to respond to a few points that were just raised during government counsel's argument. First of all, the fact that the government hammers heavily on the fact that this is highly discretionary doesn't relieve the agency of providing an explanation of reasoned decision-making. That's what all of the court's petition denial precedents say, and here they have absolutely not done that. They haven't even come close. They've again relied on a piece of litigation that did not address this parcel or this issue at all, and they've relied on a rule which, by its plain terms, does not apply in any way to this parcel. Second, I'd like to just clarify that the government is patently inaccurate about this being a question of reconsidering a boundary that had already been determined during the Colorado roadless rule. That is not what we're arguing. We are not saying a particular boundary was done incorrectly. What we're saying is this parcel was never considered. The 2002 forest plan, which is in the administrative record, there is absolutely nothing site-specific about this parcel. In the Colorado roadless rule, this parcel appears nowhere. You can go back and look at anything in the record, the final environmental impact statement, the rule itself, the preamble. This does not appear. 8,260 specifically identified acres do appear. This is not in it. So this 1,000-acre parcel has slipped through the cracks. It's never been reviewed by the agency for roadless designation, and we're asking to have this designated as roadless. But they did in another parcel is irrelevant.
But if the agency just has a blanket approach and it says, look, we've looked at a lot of issues here, there's a lot of land here, and one thing we're deciding to do is that anything that's within the boundaries of an approved ski project, we're not going to designate those areas as roadless. And in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to take out some areas that were previously designated as roadless in order to abide by this overarching principle. Then that seems like reasoned decision making, right?
So Judge Srinivasan, as I said earlier, that could be if that's what they had done. That is not what this rule says. The fact that government counsel says, don't actually look at the rule, listen to what I say, listen to my characterization, should be a red flag. If you look at the rule itself, it focused on 8,260 specifically enumerated acres. This was not one of them. If they wanted to do something with respect to this parcel, which we respectfully submit they should have done years ago, then they need to actually review the evidence, the factual evidence on the ground, and make a determination. And on that point, I want to say, because this was brought up, that where the letter where Chief Tedwell, the Forest Service's chief, said site-specific knowledge, this was based on the site-specific knowledge of his agency, there is absolutely nothing in the record. What he's referring to there, there's no question about this, he's referring to a different parcel, that is an 80-acre parcel that where the egress trail is to be located that Mr. DiMascio raised during his oral argument, and it had nothing to do with this 1,000-acre parcel, a much larger parcel, untouched, pristine qualities, which has never been evaluated by the agency.
How do you respond to the government's argument that on standing we ought to be looking, that we're looking at the period of time where the complaint was filed, and the relief you sought in the complaint is much different than what you're seeking now?
Well, Judge Griffith, it's not. Simply stated, in that declaration, Mr. Dewar does talk about how the tree cutting will affect his interest, and that's the 2006 authorization. But he also talks in other paragraphs. Paragraph 1, he talks about how by not having roadless designation conferred on this parcel, it will increase the risk of wildfire in this parcel. It will increase the effects on wildlife, including the federally threatened Canada lynx that uses this parcel. Elk migration. This is a very important elk migration corridor. He talks about in paragraphs 1 and paragraphs 4 about how the lack of a roadless designation, an erroneous lack of a roadless designation, impacts his ability, aesthetic and recreational ability to view these natural resources, including the wildlife. So that is discussed. I can assure you that that is more than sufficient for standing. The Supreme Court has said that it is undeniably a cognizable interest to view wildlife. And for him to want to do that in a roadless parcel is something that is unquestioned in this case. And I'll just say briefly, the government has not challenged injury in fact in this case. They have raised causation issues and redressability issues, which, as you know, are relaxed in these types of circumstances. They have not raised any injury in fact challenges and shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Why not? Your causation is relaxed.
Well, the redressability piece at least, but at least with respect to injury in fact, that is not at issue here.
Thank you.
Thank
we'll
you.
Take the case under advisement.